outspoken and controversial. Rodrigo Duterte says that he's retiring from politics. The Philippine president leaves a legacy marked by a harsh crackdown on drugs. But how has his time in office shaped politics? And will his successor keep his policies? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. Philippine presidents can only serve a single six-year term in office, and that's created a bit of an obstacle for President Rodrigo Duterte, who many had speculated was hoping to run for the vice presidency. But he's just announced that he's retiring from politics altogether. A recent poll had suggested that many Filipinos disapproved of his reported bid for the vice presidency. Now, there are reports that his daughter, Sara Duterte Carpio, is running for president. She's expected to join her father's former aide, Senator Bongo, who's running for vice president. President Duterte endorsed Senator Bongo's candidacy when he announced his retirement on Saturday.
The overwhelming, I said, sentiment of the Filipino is that I am not qualified, and it would be a violation of the Constitution to circumvent the law, the spirit of the Constitution.
Well, President Duterte came to power in 2016 promising to reduce crime, but his violent campaign against drugs has sparked controversy at home and abroad. Rights groups accuse his forces of carrying out extrajudicial killings and of murdering suspects. They estimate that nearly 30,000 people have been killed in Duterte's so-called war on drugs, but government figures put that number at no more than 6,000. While the International Criminal Court has opened an investigation for possible crimes against humanity. Well, let's bring in our guests, all of them joining us from the Philippines today, from Manila. We're joined by Criselda Yabez, a journalist and author in Marikina. Danilo Arau, Professor of Journalism at the University of the Philippines, and also in Manila, Richard Haydarian, an academic and author of The Rise of Duterte, A Populist Revolt Against Elite Democracy. A warm welcome to you all. Criselda, let's start with you. So, Duterte is going to retire from politics. Ah, but we've heard that before. Should we believe him this time?
Yes. I would say my quick answer would be no. But maybe there is a slight truth to it. I mean, he's been known to lie, to have something up his sleeves. So the best thing to do is to just wait and see. But it's become like, you know, a running drama in the political scene because the elections are coming up. And it kind of diverts the very important topic of today, like the pandemic, the corruption that's been going on related to the pandemic. So that's the only thing that basically gets in the way.
Danilo, what will Duterte's vision of retirement look like? If his daughter wins the presidency, can we expect him to be in the background, Wizard of Oz-like, still pulling the strings?
Most definitely, he will still be part of the new cycle and he will still maintain some influence, not just in Philippine politics, but in various aspects of social living. So we expect Duterte to still be having a prominent role. And as Criselda said, everything is quite uncertain. This is not the first time that he said that he's retiring and that he's sick and tired of politics, but, you know, something new comes along. For now, he says that he's retiring, but in my opinion, there will come a time that he will still be very influential, whether in office or not. Make no mistake about it, the deadline for the filing of candidacies in the Philippines is on October 8th, but people are watching what will happen on November 15th, where the deadline for withdrawals and substitutions will happen. So the waiting period is quite long. It's not just October 8th, it's November 15th, and most probably it may even be May 9th. Where there are allowances for last-minute substitutions, although there are some restrictions on election day.
Richard, do you agree with that, perhaps we shouldn't believe Duterte when he says he's going to retire just yet, And if he wants to stay in politics, what would his motivations be for doing so?
I mean, one thing that we have learned about populists is not to take them necessarily literally, but to take them seriously. And the problem with President Duterte is that sometimes you don't know if you should also take him literally at all, or even seriously at all. But I think in this case, there are reasons to believe that President Duterte is sensing that the tide is turning and shifting against him. If you look at it, in many ways, we are reaching a kind of a peak Duterte. His approval ratings have suffered a double-digit decline since last year. Yes, he's still popular by Western standards, perhaps, but it's on a downward trajectory. In the latest survey on the vice presidential candidates, he's 11 points behind against someone who was way behind him just a few months ago. So in terms of his competitiveness, heading into a vice presidential race to somehow have a backdoor into the Malacañang Palace, that's also not looking very good for him. And by the way, a survey came out whereby 60% of Filipinos opposed him, opposed his plan to run as a vice president, because that could potentially give him a situation whereby he could still become a president and violate the spirit and even the letter of the Constitution. In fact, even in his home island of Mindanao, more than 50% said they don't want him to run as a vice president. So maybe he's reading the writing on the wall. Of course, Duterte being Duterte, he'll try to always pull off some maneuver at the 11th hour or past it. But I think he's beginning to sense that perhaps it's better if he has his anointed successors run at the number two and number one level. On the number two, his first preference really for presidency was his longtime aide and protege, Senator Christopher Bongo, but his numbers are not good. So he's encouraging that guy to run for vice presidency and now saying, my daughter, you should run for the presidency, while Sara is saying, maybe I want to run for mayor. So this drama's been going on for a while, but the facts is that on the ground, the tide is shifting against President Duterte, and he's definitely sensing that.
Richard, you say the tide is turning. If the Constitution, let's just assume for the moment the Constitution allowed Duterte to run for a second term, would he have won?
Well, the reality is that President Duterte still has a lot of advantage on his side, right? I mean, this is a guy who has a lot of emergency powers because of the pandemic. He has tremendous amount of access to state resources. There have been corruption scandals right and left, and critics are saying maybe that has a lot to do with, you know, money that has to go to elections. So he has a lot of advantages. I think President Duterte, if he could have, I mean, he would have pushed for changing the Constitution. But the fact that he was not able to change the Constitution, a lot of even some of his allies were against him. And now some of his former allies, like Senator Manny Pacquiao, is turning against him and positioning himself as a crusader against corruption. I mean, he may be popular, but things can turn against him. Let's not forget, I think the fear of President Duterte is that the thing that he did to his predecessor, President Aquino, could happen to him. President Aquino, the late President Aquino, had a 50-60% approval rating heading into the elections. Duterte has a 60-70% approval rating. But things can turn. People are fickle. And there's a lot of anger and frustration with the mismanagement of the COVID-19 pandemic. And now even his allies are turning against him. So even if he had the right to run for re-election, which is barred by our constitution, things would not look as well for him. And I think as far as Filipinos are concerned, perhaps as they sense the chance for change, they're being more expressive about their disapproval of the president, and the climate of fear is withering away.
We'll get into what sort of president he's been in just a few moments. But Griselda, first of all, just one more question on Duterte's motivations for perhaps staying in the game, either as vice president or somewhere in the background. Is that perhaps to ensure that he remains out of reach of the International Criminal Court?
Yeah, that's exactly one reason that he might want to stay in power or at least have an influence over someone. So there's a possibility that if he wants his daughter run as president and probably think that she might win because her polls, her ratings are quite high, that would ensure his safety out of jail, basically. So that's one thing. And if not, he's maybe an ally, like his right-hand man, Senator Go, as Richard mentioned earlier. Or if not him, another ally. But that's the thing. We just don't know how far he would go to really keep his hands on the political play. That, you know, the situation with the ICC could be difficult for him in the sense that the cases are running. It's very likely that there'll be more people testifying against him. So, you know, it's probably okay. It's one of the main reasons that he might want to stay in power.
Let's get into his legacy. Danilo, has he been good for the country? He said when he came into office that he'd improve the lives of the poor through land reform, through free education and health care. Have people prospered under Duterte? Have their lives improved?
Well, of course, the narrative of the government is that things would have been going well had the pandemic not happened. But the data would show that even prior to the pandemic, there is economic hardship among many people. Contractualization is still happening, and there is job insecurity. Labor migration was still at an all-time high prior to the pandemic. And things, you know, went on a downturn when lockdowns were imposed starting in March 2020. And the government cannot deny the fact that they are focused more on several mechanisms that would run counter to the people's interests, like red tagging, like focusing on build programs, infrastructure development, or beautification programs like the controversial Dolomite Beach along Manila Bay. So these things are telltale signs that the government really doesn't care much about uplifting the plight of the people. They go for propaganda, for beautification campaigns that would look good in terms of optics in the media, but it actually doesn't redound in terms of improving the lives and livelihood of people. So if we're talking about the Duterte legacy, it's a legacy of killings, of murders, of repression of the media, and the violation of basic rights. And that would partly explain why we cannot do something like a tough balancing act wherein we enumerate the good and we try to enumerate also the bad. Because when you get down to it, killings are killings. And no amount of, you know, beautification campaigns can deny the fact that people have died. Activists and journalists have been arrested, detained, tortured, and killed, most especially the activists. So these are signs of the times that we need to end the culture of impunity and the reign of tyranny. There are certain openings and opportunities provided by the May 2022 elections, but the problem in the Philippines is very systemic and structural, and a bigger form of social change would be necessary to ensure that elite rule will not prosper again in the country.
Richard, average GDP growth in the Philippines in the Duterte years is 3.4%, and that's not bad. The lowest five-year average since the early 1990s it is, though. To what extent has the pandemic been used as an excuse for the failure of Duterte's economic policies? The economy was slowing consistently before the pandemic, but it's now suffered five consecutive quarters of GDP decline.
Right. Yeah, I mean, of course, that's Danilo is right. That's the kind of narrative that the government wants to run, that, you know, we were in a paradise and then this pandemic happened. But the pandemic has really exposed the incompetence of this administration. It has really exposed the performativeness of President Duterte. He's very good in terms of, you know, performing as a kind of a supposed competent leader. But when crisis happens, we see, you know, the paucity of that. But the reality is that even before the pandemic, the Philippines' economic growth was on a downward trajectory. It was slowing down. Foreign direct investments was among the lowest, if not the lowest, in the region. The Philippines was underperforming on many fronts. Duterte promised that he could bring in billions of dollars of investments from China now that he's picking a fight with the Americans and being nice to the Chinese. None of that came. Not a single big-ticket infrastructure project by the Chinese really kicked off under President Duterte. So things were not really looking good for him. You know, heading into the pandemic years, they tried to use the pandemic to consolidate power and create an excuse. But I think a lot of Filipinos are realizing then why the Philippines is doing worse even in the region, even compared to similar countries in the region, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia. The Philippines is not doing well. It has been a COVID-19 hub for quite some time. It has suffered one of the deepest recessions on earth next to countries like India, close to 10%. So, you know, there's a lot, I mean, they can play this game of saying this is not our fault or not, but they're now very vulnerable to some of even their former allies going against them. In fact, one I didn't mention are the Marcoses, you know, the scion of the former dictatorship. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. wants to also run as a presidency. And these are increasingly turning as rivals also to President Duterte. So that's why I'm saying he may be popular, he may have a lot of advantages, but there are a lot of vulnerabilities, and ex-allies, the opposition, some new centrists, some new populists can have a lot of vulnerabilities in Duterte's track record that they can really tweak against him. I think, in short, if you look at his legacy, it's blood and concrete, right? So in fairness, there has been a lot of roads and infrastructure in the rural, peripheral region of the country, although no big-ticket infrastructure projects. But a lot of development happened really in the peripheries of the country over the past 5 years, thanks to the fact that Duterte's predecessor saved a lot of money. So when he took power in 2016, he was in a very, very good position. And now he's going to leave a far more unstable, impoverished country than what he could have, bequeathed to his successor, in comparison to the kind of good conditions, macroeconomic and political conditions, that he inherited from the very reformists that he attacked throughout the years as supposedly incompetent and corrupt and so on and so forth.
Griselda, he said he'd tackle the oligarchs, as he called them. He's been accused of settling political scores and of gagging the media while going about that. He said that he'd tackle drugs within his first 6 months. I mean, he didn't hit that target, but as we heard at the beginning of the programme, rights groups say that 30,000 people have died in the war on drugs, or state-sponsored murder, as some will describe it. Do you think that the war on drugs will be his legacy?
Well, a negative one, definitely. I mean, what he did in the southern city of Davao, where he was mayor for 20 years, was something that he wanted to replicate for the entire country, and that didn't work. I mean, the situation in Davao is not at all the same in the rest to the rest of the country. So, yeah, that's his legacy, but it's a bad one. It's something that people will remember for years to come. And the thing there is, the sad thing that's happening now is that there doesn't seem to be a move, an effort to really hold him accountable to that. The Senate didn't stop him really from withdrawing from the ICC, and the Supreme Court did the same thing. The Supreme Court basically, you know, took its hands off from that issue. So it's now the ICC, depending on the next president, whoever that will be, to see that these cases will prosper against him.
Danilo, what are the chances then of his daughter, Sara, succeeding him? How do we explain her popularity in the opinion polls? How similar are her politics to her dad's? What's her record as mayor of Davao?
Okay, that's a good question. Actually, within the realm of possibilities, Sara Duterte assuming the presidency is very much possible, even if she already filed her certificate of candidacy as mayor of Davao City. Now, one thing about opinion polls during the pandemic is that people are very anxious, they're very stressed, and even one high-ranking official of a survey firm in the Philippines mentioned that the field interviewers sensed some anxiety whenever people would try to be, you know, responsive and cooperative to the surveys that are being conducted. So naturally, there is some skewed bias for the administration or certain remarks that would be favorable to those in power, for the simple reason that around 70 to 80% of the population would be dependent on ayuda or grant, in English. So they are dependent on government grant, no matter how high or how low, even if such amounts may not be enough and may just be a pittance compared to the high cost of living. So in that particular context, sometimes we have to understand that surveys, they're still reliable, but we have to take the results with a grain of salt because there are certain contradictions that would happen. For example, majority of the population would oppose Duterte running again, but he would still be second in terms of, the ranking for vice president. And in the same way, there would be people, majority of the people, agreeing that ABS-CBN, which was shut down, needs to have a franchise, but at the same time, the approval rating done at, around the same period for Duterte would still be high. It's that level of anxiety and stress of respondents during the pandemic that would have to be taken into account. So in not so many words, what I want to stress here is that while there is popularity, okay, we give them that on the part of the likes of Duterte and other pro-administration candidates, we have to look at the survey results done during the pandemic with a grain of salt because we have to take into account the anxiety and stress that went with the responses made by people who were interviewed during the survey. So I would rather give a more qualitative analysis rather than just depend on the quantitative empirical data as presented by the survey firms.
Okay. Richard, you touched on foreign policy a few minutes ago. Duterte's presidency was marked by a shift away from the US and towards China. Do you think that's going to continue under the next president? How indebted to China has the Philippines become under Duterte? Has it submitted to Chinese expansionism in the South China Sea and the West Philippine Sea?
Yeah, absolutely. On the foreign policy front, we also see a kind of a peak Duterte situation. As you may know, in recent months, the Philippines and the United States have somehow been making up, right? President Duterte finally assented to the full restoration of the Visiting Forces Agreement that he tried to abrogate previous years because of disagreements with the U.S. on human rights issues. And in fact, recently, on the eve of the 70th anniversary of the Mutual Defense Treaty of the United States and the Philippines, Philippines Defense Minister and Foreign Minister visited Washington, D.C., and they agreed on even further deepening their security cooperation. So I think even Duterte is sensing that, you know, he doesn't want to be on the wrong side of Americans as he heads into this very difficult and uncertain terrain, which is the transition period towards the next president. I mean, yes, Sara Duterte is still number one in the survey, but she's increasingly tied with other candidates. She was at around 28% in the second quarter of this year, and now she's down to 20%. And who knows if others are going to catch up, including the Marcoses and former allies like Pacquiao, Mayor of Manila, Isko Moreno. You know, so if you're Duterte, you know, I think Duterte was smart enough to realize you don't want to be on the wrong side of Americans. It's not only because of the influence of Americans. It's also because of the fact that there are many people in the Philippines defense establishment, in the foreign policy elite establishment, who believe that China is a legitimate threat to the Philippines and that keeping it strong with Americans is a common sense. It's a sine qua non for defending the Philippine national interest. And surveys after surveys throughout the years, whether through pandemic or not, whether we have a climate of fear or not, show that 9 out of 10 Filipinos want the Philippines to take a tougher stance in the South China Sea. So this issue of China is another vulnerability for President Duterte. And I expect a lot of his even former allies to go after him on the China issue. Let's not forget, a few months ago, Manny Pacquiao went after Duterte and saying, "You're not tough enough on China." That kind of patriotic, nationalist, even anti-China positioning, we'll most likely see more of that from both centrists and definitely the opposition in the upcoming presidential debate. Okay. So if Sara is going to run as Duterte's proxy, although I see her as much more independent and quite different in her style of governance from her father, but if she's going to run, she's going to be seen as a proxy, and she's going to be at the receiving end of every single criticism from every corner of the political spectrum as far as Duterte's domestic and foreign policy is concerned.
Griselda, do you agree with that? How much does foreign policy factor in to the way in which people vote in the Philippines for their president?
Well, the thing there is that if you ask an ordinary person in the corner of the street whether he knows anything about the West Philippine Sea, the answer most likely will be no. But on a much broader scale, and in reference to the links that we have with the Philippines has with America, it's just something that can't be broken. I mean, the Filipinos are so attached to this kind of history that I don't think we've ever imagined a relationship, you know, a friendship without America. So yes, the China issue will also be a big factor, most likely for the next elections, and that will probably fall on the security sector, the military, how the military will react to that. Because for so many years before Duterte came along, they've been so anti-China. They would even, you know, when it comes to procurement of defense material, they would even make sure that the Chinese are not involved. And suddenly they had to deal with a commander-in-chief who was telling them, well, you know, we have to be friends with China. So, I think, you know, at the end of the day for the elections, I think people will just go down to the basics, like you know, having good livelihood and stuff like that.
Okay. Mm. There, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it because we're out of time. Thank you, all of you, Griselda Yabes, Danilo Arau, and Richard Haydarian for being with us today. And thank you for watching. Don't forget you can see the programme again at any time just by going to the website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, join us at our Facebook page. You'll find that at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter, our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again. Bye for now.